Ok, good afternoon. Today we have three quite different topics. First one is the analysis of the impulse response of a room by means of the acoustical parameters defined by the standard named ISO 3382. This standard contains a lot of different parameters, but mostly the standard is devoted to measurement of reverberation time, which is still considered one of the most important acoustical parameters for room acoustics. So the first type of parameter are those related to measurement of reverberation time, which will be followed by a number of additional quality parameters which are particularly important for music and speech. So for not for noise evaluation or evaluation related to how loud is the sound in a room, but how good is the acoustics in terms of musical perception or in terms of speech understanding. Speech intelligibility is the correct technology. The last parameter is called Speech Transmission Index, STI. This will be the second lesson today because it's a technique completely different from the previous ones, which require an explanation, is based on a concept which is the modulation transfer function concept. You did not have heard of this before, so I need to explain you what is the modulation transfer function and how it can be measured. Again, it comes from an impulse response, but this is quite different, so we need the time for understanding. In the third hour today, we will change again completely topic, and we will start talking about material properties, the properties of the surface which are employed for providing sound absorption. So we are talking about the so-called absorbing panels or absorbing materials, materials which are designed for controlling room acoustic. So we are still in the field of room acoustic, but we are moving from what happened in air to what happened on the surface, on the solid surfaces, defining the boundary of the room. And we will see how these materials react to sound. Let me start from reverberation time measurement. We did already define what is the reverberation time. It's the time required for a sound decay of 60 decibels. But we are not having a source radiating a steady state sound. Our model is this one, a steady state level which drops after the source has been switched off. So the source is radiating a constant power, not an impulse, a steady noise like shh, and suddenly the source stops and the sound level decays with a line which can be approximated by a straight line in a certain range. So the theoretical model is a steady state source which is switched off. But we don't have a steady state source. We have a pulsive source which radiates a very short pulse, then you get silence, then the first reflection arrives, but it is again another pulse, then another piece of silence, another reflection, another silence gap, and so on. Going on a long time, the reflections are weaker and weaker, smaller in amplitude, but they are denser in time. So the temporal density of reflection increases. at the point that you cannot easily separate one from the other. They merge all together in a continuous tail, the reverberant tail. Indeed, we cannot apply the definition of reverberation time to the impulse response, to the original impulse response. We need to perform a time integration for transforming the response of the room to a pulse into the response of the room to a steady state signal being switched off. The math is quite easy because the steady state level, which is produced by a source which continues radiating the same power as the pulse being radiated by your pulsing source, is simply the time integral from zero to infinite of the squared impulse response value. We usually call the impulse response with the letter H. Here, letter G is employed, but it's the same. That is the impulse response, this one, and if you square it, you get energy, because remember that squared pressure is proportional to energy. You make a time integral of all the energy of the impulse response, and this gives you the total sound pressure level, which should stay steady when the source is radiating continuously, not just a pulse. Now, how can you compute the decay? You can compute the decay subtracting each energy arrival from the total energy. So you have the total energy, you subtract the squared value of this reflection. No, that was the direct sound actually. So the direct sound is going away here, then the total energy stays constant. Again, you subtract this squared value of pressure of the first reflection, you have a gradon stepping down, and so on. So, gradon after gradon, the sound decays. At a certain point, when the temporal density of reflection is very high, you don't see any more this gradon, you see a continuous curve. So, the line shown here is the forward running integral. What is a running integral? It's an integral in which one of the two integration extremes is variable, is not constant. That is the total integral from zero to infinite. This is the upward or forward integral from zero to running t. And the curve which you are building is the total minus the running integral, which comes back, thanks to the property of integrals, to the backward integral. In fact, this technique is called the Schroeder backward integral. So it is an integral from running t to infinite. When running t is zero, you get the total energy. As you move the starting interval of the integral at time t, you are only integrating after a certain, let me choose this time here. At this time here, the energy which is still decaying is the sum of all the following energy. So in practice, this curve here sloping down at every point show you the remaining energy, the energy which is still running in air after switching off the source. So, with a simple mathematical operation, which is this one, the Schroeder integral is this equation, a running integral from t, a running integral from t to end of the response, this simple formula here transform the impulse response in the decay into the decay of a steady source. So in practice, you measure your impulse response. If you chart your impulse response in decibel, you see the black line, the black curve. This is the energetic impulse response in dB. And if you apply this backward Schroeder integration, you get the blue line here, which is very linear, very smooth. You don't see any more this ripple here, because it is monotonously decaying. You always subtract from the total. So the curve is always going down, and along this blue line, it is very easy and very accurate to measure reverberation time according to the ISO 33382 standard, because now you have a very nice and clean decay curve, much cleaner and much better than what can be obtained with the traditional method of having a true steady state source which is switched off. That technique doesn't work very well. If you have this real steady state source and you switch off, you get a lot of ripple here. You don't get a very linear and smooth and nice curve. So computing the slope can be tricky. Instead, over this very nice line, this is experimental, you see. This is not a mathematical model, this is a measured decay curve. It's very smooth. So measuring the slope here is very easy and accurate. So you get a very accurate estimation of the slope of this curve. Then ISO 33382 tells you to not measure T60. So the reverberation time over a decay which is really 60 decibel, because it is impossible to get enough signal to noise ratio. In this example here, the signal to noise ratio is just 45 decibel. You can never wait for a 60 dB decay, because you will wait forever. You will never get a level which is 60 dB below the one with the source on. So the ISO 33382 standard tells you to measure T20, but T20 is not the time required for a 20 dB decay from minus 5 to minus 25. That is not T20. T20 is 3 times the time required for decaying 20 decibel. Because also if it is T20 and if it is measured from a decay of 20 dB, formally it is still a reverberation time. So it is still the time required for a 60 dB decay. Every reverberation time is always referenced to a 60 dB decay, also if it is being measured just on a 20 dB decay. Actually, the ISO 33382 standard defines 4 reverberation time. One is called EDT, early decay time, and this EDT value is really something strange, because it is something measured along these initial gradients. So it is not really a reverb. It is something related to the early reflection, to the first 3 or 4 or 5 discrete reflections. So we are not yet in the reverberant tail. We are in the discrete reflection region, and you get a slope of this part of the decay curve. This is only feasible with the impulse response measurement. You cannot measure EDT from a steady state source being switched off. And if you perform this measurement, you get a value of EDT, which is usually quite different from the reverberation time of the room. Then the standard defines 3 typical reverberation time values, which are called T10, T20, and T30. And of the 3, the preferred one, according to the standard, is T20, the intermediate one. T10 is just too short and T30 is just too long. The optimal one, according to the ISO standard, is T20. So, in 99% of real-world cases, when you are going to measure reverberation time, you are going to measure T20. Sound level meter, spectrum analyzer, any kind of software or hardware you employ, when it is not specified, you must think that it is measuring T20. Advanced software allow to measure all the four quantities defined by ISO 3382. Just changing the start and end point over which you are getting the slope of the blue curve. Okay? That's easy, and the software does this for you. Okay. Now, let me move to the other parameters. Many of these parameters are referring to a constant which is related to what happens is that you compare the early part of the impulse response with the late part. These parameters have this goal of comparing the two parts of the impulse response, with a concept which is quite rough, but which say that the early part is useful energy, and that the late part is detrimental, is bad, is something wrong, which doesn't improve the sound quality. The early part is useful, and the late part is not useful. That is not really true, because we love reverb of rooms. If you cut the response of a room to only the early part, it doesn't sound nice, it sounds dry, it sounds dull, it sounds dead. Really, the proper word is dead. A dead room doesn't have reverb and is not good, not for speech, not for music. So this concept of useful and detrimental energy is not correct. But what is correct is that there must be a proper balance between these two parts of the impulse response. So it's completely wrong to kill the late energy. What is correct is to search for a proper balance between early and late energy. And these parameters, which you are going to introduce now, evaluate this ratio between early and late energy a long time. Okay? The chart here show you two impulse response measured in the same room and having exactly the same reverberation time, because the reverberation time is the same in every point of the room. But this impulse response measurement was done very close to the source, at 1 meter from the source. This other was made in the last row of seats of the room. The room is the same, reverberation time is the same, but the two impulse response look quite different. So these other parameters are there for providing you with information of how the sound changes between this case and this one. They look different, they sound different, but they measure the same reverberation time. So the reverberation time does not explain everything. You need a nearly late parameter for getting this effect changing with distance from the source. So let me look at the first of these early late parameters, which is called the clarity index. It's called C80 because the boundary between useful and detrimental energy is set to be equal to 80 milliseconds. 80 milliseconds correspond to the integration time of our hearing system when listening to music, so using the right part of our brains, you know that our brain is divided in two. Left brain is for speech and right brain is for music. Right brain is slower than the left part of your brain. So in practice, using an 80 millisecond integration time is significant for music. And here above you have the early energy, so you have early above, is an early / late ratio, and the late energy is below, so is an early / late ratio, and the optimal value of this ratio is 0 dB. That means that the early energy must equate the late energy. They must be the same. It's wrong to kill completely the late energy. The optimal listening condition for music are obtained when the late energy is the same energy as the early energy. So the early to late ratio expressed in dB is 0. It's still good in this range, plus minus 1 dB. But if the clarity is too high, or if the clarity is too low, then music listening is not as good. Okay? The same concept is employed for speech, defining the clarity C50. Now the boundary element of the boundary time separating early from late energy has been shortened to 50 milliseconds. This corresponds to the integration time of the left part of our brains, which is the part which works for speech, and again the optimal value for speech intelligibility is the same, 0 dB. Of course, the same room cannot provide simultaneously the optimal value of C80 and of C50, because if the ratio was equal to 0, for example for music, when you move this boundary on the left, because you are going from music to speech, so you create a boundary which is not there anymore, but it is, for example, here. Okay, so you move your boundary on the left in this position. Of course, you reduce the early energy and you increase the late energy. So the ratio will be lower than 0 dB. Because the early energy has been reduced and the late energy has been increased. Oh, that's wrong. Here it is written 80, but it should be 50 also here. Okay? It's 50 to infinite and here is 0 to 50. Okay? So the slide is wrong. I want to correct it immediately for avoiding to leave a wrong thing around. Okay. Everything is clear. Another very similar parameter is the definition index. The definition index is the same as the clarity C50, but the denominator is not going 50 to infinite, but is 0 to infinite. And the result is expressed in percent, you see the 100 here, instead of being expressed in decibel. But more or less the concept is the same. This is a parameter which has been used a lot by people in Germany, but here in Italy or in France or in Spain, in South Europe, is not used. Here we mostly use the clarity index. The meaning is the same. So in practice, you can easily forget about the definition index. Knowing clarity means knowing also definition, and when you are going to choose one, my recommendation is please use clarity. It's simple, it's more traditional, and the meaning is exactly the same. Then there is a problem and a solution of this problem. The problem is that with this very sharp boundary between early and late energy, If there is a strong reflection just before or just after the boundary, this changes a lot the value of the parameter. So if you map your parameter in your room, as you move with your microphone in the room, moving from one seat to the next, the clarity can have a variation of more than 2 decibels, which does not correspond at any human perception of something really being different. Because for us, having a reflection at 79 milliseconds or 81 is absolutely the same. Instead, this parameter changes a lot. So it is a parameter which is a little unstable. It changes suddenly, moving from one seat to the next, while people moving from one seat to the next don't perceive any real variation of the acoustic. So it was defined a new parameter called center time, in which there is no predefined boundary. This is the reversed concept. As we know from clarity, that the optimal value is when the early part of the integral equates the late part of the integral, let define the time. The center time is like the gravity center of a body, the point where half of the mass is above and half of the mass is below. Okay? This is the same with acoustical energy. Is the gravity center of energy a long time? Is the point of balance between the energy which is before and the energy which is after? So the definition of center time is the ratio between these two integrals. At numerator, there is tau running time inside the integral. So the result of this ratio is a particular value of time, which happens to be the center, the gravity center of this distribution along time. How can we read the value of the center time TS? It's quite easy. What do you think is the optimal center time for listening to music? Try to guess the value. If you have understood what I have said, what is the optimal center time for listening to music? No one attempts? 80 milliseconds, of course, because if the center time is 80 milliseconds, you will get a clarity C80 value equals 0 dB, which is the optimal value. So for music, center time is optimal at 80 milliseconds. And what will be the optimal center time value for speech? 50 milliseconds. Okay, so it is a parameter which changes continuously. This doesn't make sudden jumps when moving one seat apart. And the value tells you if the room is more suited for speech or for music. But you also have to think that music is not only one type of acoustical event. There are various genders of music. There is symphonic music, which is probably the one to which people think if you say music without anything else. But there is rock music, pop music, jazz. There is clerical music for churches, sacred music, organ in the church, similar things. And the acoustical event is quite different. For listening to an organ in a church, usually you appreciate much more reverberant energy. So the optimal center time for organ in a church is probably 100 or 110 milliseconds. Instead, when you are listening to a specific type of music which also contains speech, and that is called song, when you are singing, you have both speech and music together. Then 80 milliseconds is perhaps a bit too much if you want to listen to the words. And again, here there is a lot of variation. If you take opera, that is almost music. So you are close to 80 milliseconds, because you are not going really to understand what an opera singer is telling. It is using his voice like a musical instrument, and you don't understand a word. You don't understand anything in practice. In various type of singing, the speech content becomes more and more important, ending up to rap, and in rap you have substantial speech. The music is just a background, and so there you need to have a center time much shorter when you listen to rap music. Okay, so don't think there are sharp boundaries. The nice thing of center time is that it's a single parameter, good for everything, and you can evaluate the value which you measure with a certain tailoring of the optimal value depending on the specific gender of music or of speech which you are listening. Even about language. For example, Italian is a slow language with a rate of phonemes which is quite slow. So it allows for a larger center time, still giving good intelligibility. Some other language have a phonetic rate much faster. English is definitely faster than Italian, not my English, native English is much faster. And so for English people it is required to design classrooms with a shorter value of center time than what is required here in Italy. And there are other languages which are even faster than English. Some third world language, they are terrible. And with those kind of language, if you don't have a very short center time, you cannot understand. Okay? So also for speech, there are those regional variation. Also in Italy, Italy is very long, and the way we speak in North Italy is quite different from the way they speak in South Italy. So there are regional variation, and what is good for a classroom here in Parma could be wrong for a classroom in Sicily or in another country. Okay? Last acoustical parameter, which is still a mono parameter. All the parameters which we have discussed now were measured with a single omnidirectional pressure microphone. The last one is sound strength. Sound strength is the sound pressure level scaled on the sound power level of your sound source. So it is the boost with that the room provides for a certain power of your source. A good room has a proper strength, providing some kind of amplification to the power of the voice of the talker. This is particularly important for speech or for singing, when the room must provide support, so giving more decibel than in the free field. The famous environmental correction factor is quite close as concept, the strength, to the environmental correction factor. Is again a boost which the room applies to your sound field. Instead, being defined with reference to the sound pressure level created by your source at the same distance as you are, as the environmental correction factor K, that was defined as the difference between the sound pressure level and the sound pressure level which you get in free field, no room, no reflection, no reverb, at the same distance. Instead, strength is referred as the sound pressure level which you get in any particular seat of this room, subtracting the sound pressure level in free field, not at the same distance, but at a fixed distance of 10 meters. What does this mean? That the strength always come up going close to the source. As your reference value is always at 10 meters, Even if you are outdoors, when there are no room reflection, if you are closer than 10 meters, the strength will be positive, will be greater than zero, because you are still boosting the level with the reference, with reference to the sound pressure level in free field at 10 meters. In a room like this one, also in the end of the room, more far than 10 meters than the source, the reverb still bring you some positive strength. So generally speaking, in closed room, usually strength is always a positive value. What is the optimal value of strength? It depends on the usage of the room. For me, for speaking without need of microphone and amplifier, is required to have a strength of at least 10 decibels. If you get a boost of more than 10 decibels, then you can make your lesson without use of the microphone. This room, unfortunately, does not meet this requirement. It's around 6 or 7 decibels. It's positive, it's not zero or negative, but in the last row of the room, the strength is not large enough for me being able to make the lesson without the amplifier. Okay? There are small classrooms when the strength is 15 or 16 decibels, and in a small classroom no one uses the amplification because it's not required. For a large theater, in some of these theaters which are very reverberant, particularly in North Europe, you still have value of strength which are around 10 or 12 decibels. In Italian theaters instead, like La Scala in Milan or like the Regio Theater here in Parma, the room is not very reverberant, there is not a lot of energy. So usually the strength is just a few decibels, 4, 5, 6 decibels, not enough. And the singers, particularly for opera, are not really very happy. Here the Teatro Regio in Parma is terrible. It has a strength which is below 4 decibels, so it is very dead. The singer requires to use a lot of power, and at the end of the performance of the opera, they are really tired. They make a terrible effort for singing in the Regio Theater in Parma. Almost like singing outdoors. Singing outdoors is still very hard because the strength there can be quite below zero. Think to a Roman theater like Taormina or Syracuse. Syracuse is Greek, but it's the same. Those fan-shaped theaters outdoor, there is no reverb, no support. Strength is very low, is often below zero decibel. If you don't use an amplifier and loudspeaker, it's very hard to make a performance nowadays. Our actors are not used to raise their voice so much, okay? Perhaps at the time of Greeks or Romans, the actors were used to that, but nowadays they are not. And so it's very difficult to have both singing or speech performance in these open-air theaters because strength is not enough. That is very easy to measure if you have a calibrated sound source. If you have a sound source of Knaun power, then the measurement of strength is straightforward. You just switch off your power source with pink noise, for example, and then you go in various positions and you measure the sound pressure level, make the difference, and you get the strength. Okay? Okay, now we are going to study binaural or in general spatial parameters. The first one is the so-called interaural cross-correlation. This, now, don't look at the formula, we will look at this in a couple of slides later. Is the correlation between the signal measured at the entrance of the ears of a dummy head or of a true human head. We have seen in the past lesson those binaural microphones to be inserted in the ears. You measure your impulse response with those binaural microphones, so it is a stereo impulse response with two channels, left and right, you correlate, compute the correlation coefficient between these two signals. The correlation coefficient is just a number ranging between 0 to 1, and the higher the value, the more similar is the signal after 2 years. And this is bad, because if the 2 years are capturing the same signal, there is no stereophony, no spatial information, no envelopment. The sound is bad because it sounds distant, it sounds far from you, and so you don't perceive a good envelopment in the music or in the speech. So IICC is the only one acoustical parameter which is as better as it is lower. Okay? It must be as low as possible. Then we have another spatial parameter which is called lateral fraction. In this one you make a ratio between the lateral sound coming from the side of your head to the wall sound. So this is the directive microphone pointing in the Y direction, the direction of your ears, divided by the W signal, which is the omnidirectional one. This is called JLF, or lateral fraction, and is often used, perhaps more often than IACC. There is a different version, again, used only in Germany, in practice, and so we forget about this variation of the lateral fraction concept. Let me explain better how these spatial parameters are measured. For measuring IACC, we need a dummy head and torso, like this one, with microphones here, inside the ear ducts. Instead, for measuring lateral fraction, you need a microphone like this one, with switchable polar directivity pattern, which is called a pressure velocity microphone, because when you have the omnidirectional polar pattern, your is a pressure microphone. When you rotate this knob until you see the figure of eight polar pattern, that is a velocity microphone. So in practice, you need to make an impulse response measurement, which is 2 channel. In case of a binaural dummy head, you measure an impulse response like this one, with left and right channels, and you select just 80 milliseconds, you see, because what we are measuring is a IACCE. E stands for early. So again, we are looking at music, and we are looking only at the important part for music, that is the first 80 milliseconds of the impulse response. Here you see a strong reflection on the left ear, which was not so evident on the right ear, because this was a lateral reflection. And again, here you see a reflection which is instead stronger on the right ear, and it is weaker on the left one. Some reflections, instead, are more or less the same, like this one, on both channels. This is probably a reflection from ceiling. A reflection from ceiling is arriving identical on both ears. So, a symmetrical reflection is increasing IACC, which is bad. Asymmetrical lateral reflection are providing low value of IACC, which is good. So, in designing the geometry of a room, the architect should provide good lateral reflection and should discourage, remove if possible, reflection from ceiling, because lateral reflection reduce the IACC and create the spatial sound, the enveloping sound. Instead, reflection from above are not nice because they provide a detached sound, a far sound, not a sound surrounding and enveloping the listener. Okay? This is the concept. So this is the formula in which you enter the signal of left and right ear. At the numerator you make the product, a denominator, you make the product of the square, which is the geometrical average of the two signals. This ratio gives you a number, and this number usually range between 0 and 1, and this value gives you the IACC acoustical parameter. The optimal value should be as low as possible, usually around 0.3. It is impractical, impossible to build a room with value of IACC lower than 0.3. That is the minimum achievable goal. But with 0.4, still the sound is very good, it's very enveloping. With 0.7, instead, the sound is not as nice. With 1, is horrible. Let me see the lateral fraction. In this case, the two channels which you are recording are called W, omni, and Y, which is called the directive figure of eight channel. W and Y. So you make the ratio between these two, as shown here. Again, the integral terminates at 80 milliseconds. Here, in the lateral sound, the integral starts not from 0, but from 5 milliseconds. This means that here, in the figure of 8, actually the direct sound is thrown away, is destroyed. We are not integrating the direct sound here, because the direct sound is always from front. The hypothesis here is that the microphone was mounted, aligned, facing the loudspeaker, the sound source. So the sound is coming from that direction. If the sound comes from this direction, in theory, there should be no direct sound in the figure of eight microphone. As the microphone is never perfect, as we have seen in the past lesson, some signal always enter, but we don't get it because we start integrating at 5 milliseconds, removing the first 5 milliseconds of information. This parameter instead is good if it is large, because the lateral energy must be large as possible, compared with the total energy. Of course, again, this value will never increase, go much above 0.7. So this is a parameter we change in the range 0.7, the optimal value being 0.7. At first rough approximation, there is a relationship between LF and IACC, which is very simple. LF is 1 minus IACC. So when IACC is 0.3, lateral fraction is 0.7. Okay? In practice, you usually measure one of the two. It's rare the case in which you go with two stereo microphone systems, one of the first type for measuring binaural sound and one of this kind for measuring lateral fraction. Usually when you go in a room for mocking measurement, you choose between a binaural system or a pressure velocity system. Are these measurements reproducible? We tested different dummy head and different pressure velocity microphone for checking if changing the brand of the probe, the result stayed the same. Here we are in an echoic room. The dummy head is mounted over a rotating turntable and the measurement is repeated at various orientation of the probe. Here is the result at very low frequency, this is at 90 degree incidence. So the sound is coming from the side, from lateral direction, from one side. And in this case, IACC value stay approximately at 1, very bad, up to 2 kHz, then fall downs, but fall downs differently for the four dummy head which we have tested. If instead of considering a sound coming only from one direction, we consider a perfect diffuse sound field, the difference is larger, and again you see that some dummy head have a behavior which is significantly different from the others. This means that these measurements generally are not well reproducible. So they are not very scientific, these IACC measurements. If you compare the two cases, one before a room treatment and one after, and you measure with the same dummy head, as a comparative test, it can be meaningful. But as an absolute test, if you want to compare your result with the result of a different team in a different room employing a different dummy head, you cannot really compare, because every dummy head is different. Also, every human head is different. So if you use those wearable microphones inside your ear ducts, again, expect that changing the human wearing the microphone, you will get different results. It's not reproducible. The same, unfortunately, happens also with pressure velocity microphone. Here, as you see, we tested four different pressure velocity microphones, and again, the result is that the reproducibility is not nice. Here we are very close to the source, where the direct sound is dominating and the lateral fraction value is low, but still there are already some significant difference between the different microphones. And when you go much more far from the source, the difference is even bigger. So those are crazy numbers. There is nothing reliable and comparable among different probes. So I warn you that these techniques, which are aimed to evaluating the spatial property of the room, both with the binaural technology or with the pressure velocity technology, all these techniques till now, as of today, are not reliable and reproducible. So you can use them, but be careful, not trust too much to the result you obtain with this kind of spatial analysis of the sound field. Last slide, then we have the break. This is the software which we are going to use today, but also in the lab exercitation in January, for analyzing the impulse response. It's called the Acoustical Parameters plugin. You just open the plugin, you launch this software, and you get this data selection window, in which mostly you have to inform the software of what kind of microphone are you using. In this example, it was a binaural dummy head. You can choose between many different type of microphone, of course, if you are processing a stereo recording. If it is a mono recording, there is no choice to be done. As you press OK here, you get this picture, which shows you the impulse response in black, the integrated Schroeder curve in blue, and this table containing all the acoustical parameters which we discussed at every frequency band. If you click on the selector of frequency band, the chart shows you the impulse response at the corresponding band. If you click here on the parameter, you see the result for this parameter at all the frequencies. Now, I show this to you very quickly. Okay. We have this impulse response, which was measured in this classroom with exponential sine wave method. You remember, we made the measurement together, and we analyzed this measurement with the acoustical parameter plugin. Okay? This is a mono measurement, so you don't have to choose the microphone type. And this is your impulse response. Now it is the linear wideband frequency band. We can look at 1 kHz, for example. At 500 Hz, here still is good. At very low frequency, the small loudspeaker which we did employ is not providing a very good signal-to-noise ratio, you see. So it starts to be good only at 125 Hz above. And going up with the frequency, you get a very nice linear decay over which the measurement of reverberation time is fine. Instead, you see here that at very low frequency, reverberation time was not measured correctly. And you can look at the value of the parameters. For example, T20. T20 is ranging around 1 second, more or less. Or you can see T30. Not very different, as you see. The user is T10, 10 decibels. Again, not very different. Here some difference appears. EDD is instead much shorter. You see the difference between T20 and EDT. EDT is larger at high frequency and smaller at low frequency. Why? We don't know. It depends on the early reflection, because EDT is the slope in the early reflection region, and instead T20 is the late tail. Then you have clarity C50, very large, because this is a classroom, so we have a lot of clarity. This is C80, which is even larger, that's normal. For a given value of C50, C80 must only be larger, because the early part is wider and the late part is shorter, so it can only increase. There is definition, there is strength. I think the vertical scale in this case is not calibrated, because the values are absolutely negative, which can only be wrong in this room. How can you calibrate the strength value? You should select only the direct sound. You silence everything after the direct sound. Effect. Silence. So now we have only the direct sound. You compute the acoustical parameter. You know the distance of the source to the microphone when we made the measurement, and in this case the distance was quite short, probably it was 1 meter or perhaps 2 meters. Okay? So the distance was shorter, and you store this as the reference sound field. Now, when you are going to reprocess the original impulse response, now G should be calibrated. And now you see the correct value of G, which are quite large, around 15, 16 decibel. Okay, the measurement point was very close to the source. So now the sound field is boosting, the room is boosting the sound field significantly, providing a lot of support to the voice. But the measurement point was close in this case. Then you repeat the measurement at increasing distance from the source, and you usually see the strength falling down. Okay, that's all for now. That is how we compute the acoustical parameter inside a room from the impulse response. Any question? Okay, let's talk.